You are listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast, a show for women who are chasing their everyday and epic adventures. This podcast is hosted by Christy Moan and me, Katherine Taylor, and powered by Feisty Media.
Well, my co-host didn't show up for the podcast today. So, Anna, you're going to have to be my co-host and the guest.
I'll do my best.
It's going to be very exciting. So I have Anna Hicks with me today, who is a new friend to me, and I'm really excited to get to know you a little bit.
I'm excited to get to know you, too. Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. So our favorite thing, we always like to talk about your story of how you got involved in cycling. How did you get on the bike?
Yeah, so I, growing up, played a lot of different sports. So I started with riding horses. Then I played some volleyball for most of high school. Then I started running track and cross country my last year of high school. And that kind of got me on a D1 cross country and track team in college. So that was kind of an unexpected twist. So I started running in college. I ran for 3 years of college, and then I had found cycling during my sophomore year. So that was in 2020, right before the pandemic hit. I just kind of picked up my commuter bike one day and I was like, I'm gonna ride this for 20 miles. And I had a blast. And I was like, that was so exciting. It was fast. It was fun. I went so far. Then I was just kind of hooked on cycling. And then from there, I got my first road bike, and then I got my first mountain bike, and I fell in love with mountain biking. And then fast forward to 2021, I did my first race. And just kind of, I then transitioned from running to cycling from there. That's what I've been doing since.
So you weren't one of the injured cyclists or injured runners that took up cycling. You just found it and loved it.
No, I definitely had some injuries. There was a reason.
Every runner.
Yeah. I definitely had quite a few injuries throughout college that were challenging in their own way, but it did lead me to cycling. I think one thing that helped me fall in love with cycling was that I got to reconnect with this like competitive side of myself that kind of got stomped out during all the running injuries, because I was constantly just kind of scared of running. And it was always like something that I feared versus something that empowered me. So then when I got on the bike and I could go as long and as hard as I wanted without fear of injury, like it kind of unlocked this like competitive spirit again that I had kind of been missing throughout those 3 years of running in college. Because I don't think I think I raced maybe once in college, but other than
that,
for most of it. And then also the pandemic was in the middle, so it kind of messed things up.
You really had a sucky experience.
Yeah.
where did you go to college?
I went to Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you, this is just jumping right in. So we've talked to several runners and a lot that were injured, and a lot it was because of the culture of underfueling mm-hmm. and running. Was that your stuff related to that, or was it more just like other kinds of injuries?
Yeah, it definitely was related. I think I had a combination of one, being really new to running when I started on a D1 team. Like I had only been running for a little less than a year. So like my mileage and training was really low compared to my teammates. So I was recruited onto a team, but coming into that environment, a lot of the girls were running twice as much as I was and running faster than I was. Even though my race times were some of the best in my recruiting class, like training wise, I was very underdeveloped. Mm-hmm. And so when I came into that program, I was kind of intimidated, or like I wanted to prove myself. And so I kind of jumped in like to too high volume in training. And then I was under fueling as well, because I wanted to look the part of being like a really good runner. Like I was just chasing this like pinnacle of excellence where I was like, I need to run as much as everyone else is and train as hard as them, and also like look as fit as I possibly can, you know? And I think that kind of led me to this spiral of, you know, under fueling, overtraining, getting injured, struggling with mental health, struggling with fueling, you know, and kind of just like in that cycle. But I think throughout that, like I learned a lot of really important lessons that now I can apply to cycling, and like I don't have to deal with those issues now. I just get to like train hard, fuel hard, and then like perform well and perform consistently. And I think that has something that's like helped me be in the sport of cycling, where like I think a lot of eating issues and overtraining issues are also super common.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it is, it's not, and I do feel like maybe gravel cycling is a little bit healthier because a lot of people left some of the spaces where they, there was a little more pressure there. Like, I think it's pretty bad still in the road scene. And a lot of it is like the old school coaching too, right? Like, I hate to say it, a lot of male coaches that still believe like the lighter you are, the faster you are. So don't, you know, don't eat that extra piece of bread, even though you.
Yeah, totally. And there's so much misinformation. Like, my college degree is in nutrition and I work in sports nutrition. I work for Kristen Arnold. She has a, she's a cycling coach. She's also, a registered dietitian. Yeah, she's awesome. So she's been a great mentor to me, and I work for her in her private practice. And like, we see so much misinformation out there in sports nutrition, especially in cycling, especially in men's cycling, especially like U23 men. Like, they are told so many different things. Like, I hear things that like European coaches have told them, and it's just like, it's just not true. I'm like, that's just not how the science works. Like, we can Google this, and like, Google's going to tell us that it's not true. Like, it's really, really basic stuff. And there's just so much misinformation. And I think it can create a bad relationship with food. I don't think it always does, but I think it definitely can, which I think can be dangerous. So it is cool. Like, in gravel, I think people have almost become like competitive with fueling, where they're like, actually, I can fuel more than you can, like per hour, you know, like I can take in 120 grams of carbs per hour. And it's like, that's now seen as like a positive thing, where like I think in past generations of cycling, obviously I wasn't in it, so I can't speak from firsthand, but it seems like, you know, it was more like an eating is cheating kind of narrative, you know, and like under fueling was more praised. So I think like overall cycling is going in a really like better direction, more healthy direction.
Yeah, I agree. We do a lot in triathlon in the feisty world too, and that's been a place where they've really seen like understanding fueling has changed. You know, like the races are getting so fast, and some of it does have to do with the shoes and some of the other technology, right? But a lot of it is like now they're making products where you can take in so many carbs an hour.
Yeah,
and they're like, oh yeah, it's really like it's fuel, like you can take that in.
Yeah, I've heard like coaches and stuff refer to it as like food doping. Like, just eating carbs is like a form of doping, because like
it, which is funny, because actually if coaches all along would have just been encouraging athletes to eat, like it would have been kind of natural doping, you know, like, it's like because you have the energy to train and recover, and it's just so funny, like the kind of the narratives that we went down, and we're like, how many careers did we actually ruin, or we didn't see what potential that person could have had because we put them down this road of like underfueling.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I feel like that's seen a lot in running. I know, like, I don't remember. I think I might get this wrong, but for high school girls, there's this thing called like the NXN effect. I think it's that. It might be a different meet, but it's like this big national track meet. I think Nike puts it on. I don't know that much about running.
Oh, is it the Foot Locker one?
Or Foot Locker. Yeah. Foot Locker. And it's like, it's like the curse, because like whoever wins that like doesn't go on to like be successful in college, and I think that's, it's really sad, but it really like sheds a light on this fact that like people are pushed at a very young age to like have this really high level of performance and under fuel and be underweight, and that just like automatically leads to injuries, and it leads to fitness plateaus, you know. It just like has like all of these negative consequences. And I mean, there's symptoms of red S, like relative energy deficiency in sport, go so far beyond just injury. It's like your hormones, your mental health, your gut health, like, you know, just like literally every single like system in your body is affected by that and is harmed by that. And like those effects do last. And so I think it's like so important to like definitely change the narrative around food.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you found a healthier place in cycling. I did want to, you said you played volleyball, and before we go on, this is not a volleyball podcast at all, but isn't it crazy what's happening in volleyball right now? Like,
the collegiate
volleyball, it's like collegiate volleyball is getting the most viewership. Like, they're beating out football games in primetime.
That's awesome. I didn't know that. That is so cool.
Like, I think it's Nebraska and Wisconsin, their volleyball teams. Like, if they're playing the same day as their football teams, they're, like, beating viewership for football.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Like, there's something really cool happening in volleyball right now.
Yeah, I noticed that even when I was in college, our volleyball team at Cal Poly was phenomenal. It was definitely by far our strongest sport. So, like, that was pretty common. Like, everyone went to volleyball games, and, like, no one really went to football games.
Yeah.
And that's I cool. think it's so fun. It's such a fun sport to watch. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I think because it moves fast.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, it's just, it's an easy sport to kind of watch what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely entertaining for sure.
Anyway, I just was like, with the media side of our company, on the Feisty Media side, we have been putting a lot of content up. And so I've seen the volleyball stuff. And I was like, because volleyball was not a thing way back when I was in high school, that much of a thing for women. And I just didn't realize that it had taken off so much.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And now the professional leagues are starting to develop. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I feel like it's another sport where because I have friends that played volleyball and I lived with volleyball players in college. And I think it's another sport like cycling where there's really not a professional scene like in the US. And like a lot of the girls, like if they want to go pro in volleyball, like they move to Europe and they're like on some European team where like nobody speaks English and like it's kind of a rough lifestyle. And it's like, that's pretty similar to road cycling, you know, like we don't have a huge scene here. So a lot of times, like you're going over to Europe and you're going to be on, you know, some random team and who knows what the environment's going to be like. And it does make it challenging for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk sleep. My sleep routine has become so critical to my evenings. When I get good sleep, I make better choices, whether that's with food or exercise or simply my day-to-day activities. All the reading and listening I've done over the last year to help me with my sleep led me to Pillar, and it's been the quote-unquote game changer. The triple magnesium formula has improved both my REM sleep and my deep sleep, which were two areas that were very much in need of improvement. I've struggled with both those for years. But even better, since I've been taking Pillar, I've noticed that not only have those improved, I just feel better rested and more recovered. Pillar is offering our U.S. listeners a 15% discount for you to give it a try for yourself. Head over to thefeed.com/pillar, that's P-I-L-L-A-R, and use the code GGG15 to start a journey to better sleep.
So you primarily were focusing on mountain biking, and then now you're in the Grand Prix for 2024. Were you already doing some gravel cycling, or is gravel cycling new?
Yeah, so I started doing road and mountain, and I've done like a handful of mountain bike races, like maybe 5 or 6. And then I have done quite a bit of road racing this past year, especially. Gravel has kind of just been like thrown in there for fun throughout the last 2 years. I've really only been like racing like at a high level this year. So I've done like a couple gravel races, but I'm definitely not like my specialty or what I've focused on for sure. I think this year, when I went to Europe this summer and raced with Saniska, on the road, and then I got back and I just kind of jumped into the gravel scene, and I kind of felt like I was in like way over my head, because I was like, these races are really long, like I'm not used to feeling this much, like I didn't even have a gravel bike. Like I went to Gravel Nats and I rode like a cross bike that was on like a stock cross cassette, and like,
oh, that's amazing.
Nothing was like set up for gravel, and so it was definitely just like jumping in the deep end for sure.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, we just had Abby Mickey on a few weeks. I think her episode came out the week before Thanksgiving, and we talked a lot about the road cycling scene in Europe, and it was such an enlightening and eye-opening conversation. How have you found going from being, and you're just maybe getting back into the US scene, but being a female competitive cyclist in Europe as compared to America?
I think the biggest thing is just the viewership differences. Like when you go to Europe, like people, there's a lot of fans and like people are into the sport. I like remember like going over there and they're like, people are going to ask you for your rider card. And I was like,
Yeah.
what's a rider card? And they're like, oh, like it's your photo. And they like want you to sign it. And like some guy had like printed off a photo of me and like asked me to sign it. And I was like, just shocked. Cause I was like,
Yeah.
you know, like in the US, like I don't really think even at the highest level of cycling, like you don't really feel like people like know you. You know, like you don't walk into the grocery store and people are like, oh, like that's our national champ. You know, like they've never even heard of cycling.
Yeah.
And so I think over there it's just such a different culture where cycling is a big deal, and that makes it like very exciting. I think I'm an athlete who likes to perform, and so like if there's an audience, like I enjoy that, and like I ride better. So I think it was fun to be over there and like feel like you're actually like performing, and there's an audience, you know, and there's like people watching and people care. You know, it's like in the US, you're kind of just, at least in road racing, like you're out in the middle of nowhere, and like there might be like a handful of people's parents there, but like that's pretty much it. You know, like
Yeah.
there's really no fan base here. I think there has been in the past, and hopefully there will be like in the future, but
Yeah.
right now it's definitely in a weird place.
Yeah, it's interesting the disparity in Europe between the fan base, like that I hear of people, and granted, we also talked about this, Abby. It's just a lot better to watch cycling, right? You're going through all these small towns, like it's
Yeah.
easy to walk out on your street, like they're very community based. But the fanship compared to the way that especially women athletes are treated in the media over there is so different. And then we're kind of flipped here. Like, I feel like women are treated better on the media side, but we just don't have the same kind of like, if people know who are fans of people, it's typically the males over here. Like, they know who they are.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting flip. I
Yeah,
feel
I
like.
definitely think, yeah, it's just an interest. It's interesting just to kind of see like how it all plays out. You know, like I think different disciplines are also different. And like women are, I don't want to say treated different, but represented differently in different disciplines of cycling. Like I think, you know, like women's World Cup mountain biking seems to like get maybe more viewership than like women's road. Don't quote me on that. I actually have like no idea what the statistics are. But I feel like it's like seems more equal on mountain biking than it does like in road. I don't
Yeah.
know if that's like a because mountain biking is newer and like road does have such deep roots like in men's cycling. I don't know why that is. It's just interesting to kind of look at the differences.
Yeah, I would guess it's because in mountain biking, you have the same opportunity you have in gravel cycling. Like, you might be on a team, but the team is not primary. The rider is. So you can, like, Kate Courtney has built a great fan base around Kate Courtney, right? Where, like, if you're a fan of, like Team Jumbo-Visma, or, and then you might know the riders, but you might still like love that team, even if the riders change or, whatever it is. So like the team seems more important than the
Interesting.
individual.
Yeah, do you think that affects like how individual women are like represented in the media? Like if they're on a team versus like as an individual?
I think like if you're a star of that team, right? Like you have, like everybody knows who Demi Vollering is.
Right.
But I couldn't tell you like other people that are on that team, where I feel like when you are kind of representing yourself, you have endless opportunity to build that platform. So it's opposite, right? Because the team is doing all the work for you. And if you're doing well for the team, you have a ma major advantage. But you could be like, I feel like an okay cyclist. Maybe you're not finishing at the top, you're not winning everything, but you have a great platform, or you have a great following, or you're known for something. Allison Tetrick's a great example, right? Like, she definitely was a great cyclist when she was riding road, and she did really well in gravel. But even as she started to transition out of winning things, like, she still has a strong platform and lots of sponsors because of the brand of building community, stuff like that. And there's other cyclists that I see that they just have like a great personality around them, and even if they don't necessarily win, like they're going to get sponsorship, and because people see them as a great ambassador for the sport. So anyway.
It is really interesting. I think like that's definitely something that is talked about a lot, especially in this age of like privateering versus teams. Like just looking at the support wise, like you know, it is interesting to see athletes who are very well supported, yet maybe like don't have race results or aren't striving for race results. when there's maybe athletes who are racing in the world tour at the highest level, you know, like they're in the Tour de Femmes and stuff, but they don't have like as much support. Like maybe they're not paid this much or just people don't know them. It's definitely an interesting little like dichotomy in sport right now where you can be such a, like regarded as a professional athlete when really like you don't have any professional like accolades or results or anything. Yet people like when they think about cycling, they're like, oh, I think of this person. And you're like, actually, like they're not really racing maybe, or they're not really getting results, but like you think of them as a professional. But then, you know, like you said, like you don't know the names of all the women on Yumbo. And it's like, neither do I, you know, like I don't know who all these women are, yet they're racing at the highest level of the sport, you know, and they're contributing to wins at the highest level of the sport. So it's just really interesting. It's interesting to see how like social media and like personal branding really, really does impact that quite a bit. And I think gravel is kind of an interesting example of that with athletes in so many different like niches, I guess.
Yeah. It gives a huge opportunity to people. But it is a disadvantage for the people that are like, I just want to show up and race hard and I don't want to do all the other stuff. If they went, you know, like winning will always, if you win Unbound, it is always going to be a career maker.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you have like, you don't have a great personality, but the opportunities for your career can go a lot further if you have a good brand around yourself. Yeah.
I think you also get to have like a really cool impact on people as well, because you get to like build a platform where you can connect with more people. Cause you can like have an amazing story and like be a phenomenal human being who's super inspiring. But like, if people aren't connected to your story, then it's like, it's hard to kind of, to like be that voice of inspiration or to use your story to build, I don't want to say a following, but just like build people that you get to inspire and people that you get to connect with and help with. And you know, you get to have a bigger cause, like when it's not just about the race results, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, it just seems like gravel gives you the opportunity to see yourself as a business or in mountain biking too, I think, in some ways. Like we build a business at Feisty Media. Like a lot of the work that I do is focused work on things that I really like and are in my wheelhouse. That would be my training and competing if I were a professional racer. But I also have to do a lot of crap that's like not in my wheelhouse, but it builds our brand. And it, you know, and I think it's the same thing. Like if you see yourself as a business, you're like, well, I'm training and I'm racing, but then also I've got my social media, you know, like this, I've got, how do I contribute to the community? How do I build the fandom? So I think the people that see that, they want to stay in this privateer space long-term. Like if you can make that shift, you're going to do better.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. Cause like someone will always, you know, win the race the next year, you know, like you can't make your whole brand, you know, winning Unbound because then next year someone else wins, right? And because results just like aren't forever, but like I think the people you can connect with, like those are much longer term.
Yeah, I would anchor a guess that some of the women that are making the most in gravel cycling have not won big events this year. Or
as far as I know, I agree with that. Yeah, it's definitely interesting.
Yeah, it's an. I could talk about the business side of things all day long. Okay, so you did get into the Grand Prix next year, and are you racing as part of a team? Or I feel like Christy told me something about this because I was like, I don't know, Anna.
I'll be racing with a crit team in the U.S., the NCL Denver Disruptors, next year.
Oh, nice.
So I had signed with them before I'd even decided.
Wait, is this the National Cycling League or?
Yeah.
And so, you got to give us a scoop on this. I'm so curious.
I don't know a ton, but I'll do my best. I've only really raced like one big crit, so I'm pretty new to the crit scene as well. Pretty new to everything in cycling. So forgive me if I'm very misinformed on.
I think like crit's can help you because the start of the races now are so, especially in gravel, those big gravel events, they're so like hard and, you know, the crit stuff will probably really help you with that. Anyway,
yeah, go ahead. Totally. I think those road skills are important, especially with the women having our own starts at all the races this year. I think like my experience on the road, especially my experience in Europe, I think will be very helpful because like the racing there is just a whole nother level of aggression and positioning and, you know, being confident in the group and knowing how to move through a peloton and knowing how to follow moves and which moves you should follow and which ones you should not. And, you know, all of those little racing nuances that come with experience. I think I kind of got like a big dose of that this summer. And I think that that will help a lot for next year.
Yeah,
for
I
sure.
agree.
I'm excited to see.
But the National Cycling League, because they came in really strong and then they pulled back, right? So Denver's one of the cities that they're going to still open.
So the way they still have like their, so they had two teams last year, and this year they actually added a third team.
Okay.
So they're actually still growing. That last year was their first year as a program. And then this year they have added a team in Atlanta. So they'll have a Denver team, a Miami team, which they had last year. And then this year they'll also have an Atlanta team. And then they're hosting four races, I believe, throughout the year. Like this National Cycling League races. And then we'll also go to the other races like in the US. So like some of the road races and some of the other big criterium races.
That's cool. And do you get a salary to race for them?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. That's They're cool. supporting their riders, which is awesome.
Yeah. And then do you train together as a team or do you, cause you're just racing the other two teams, right?
No. So they actually have, I believe 8 women's teams and 8 men's teams. I'm not positive on the number, but they have other crit teams in the US like that come to their races. So they host the races and they own 3 teams.
Okay.
But their races
like Legion are, would come or some of those teams.
Yeah, so like a lot of the big crit teams I know last year, like Roxo Race and like Bolle Factory Racing was there and like CCB was there, and I didn't go to any of them, so I'm not positive. But those are all like girls I know and men I know who were at those races from different teams. So they have, I'm not exactly sure who will be in the league this year. I don't know when they announced that, but they have like a large field coming to their races.
That's very cool. I mean, crits freaking terrify me, especially as someone who came to cycling through triathlon, and I'm always like, triathlete, go!
Yeah. It's okay. Crits terrify me.
3 feet yeah. of me, either direction. So it would be my worst nightmare, but they're so fun to watch and so fascinating. And I did hear an interview with the woman that's helping to build that. And it is like cycling is such not a spectator friendly sport. And so having events that are kind of the gateway to that, like crits, I think where you can create like a vibe and an environment around them is really important for the growth of the sport, I think.
Yeah. Like, I think it's really cool. Like how NCL is like taking this really nuanced approach, and like their whole purpose is like to increase viewership, and they're doing this like in this new and exciting way that's like really like changing like how we like view road cycling in the US. And I think that that's brought a lot of excitement, and the fact that they've like gathered outside support from like other sport industries and that they have like kind of this greater reach, I think can like really help grow cycling. So it's cool, it's really cool to be a part of that. And yeah, crits are really fun to watch, which is cool. And like the hard thing with cycling is it's just like you said before, you know, like we're not necessarily riding like through towns where people can like come out and watch. Like it's really hard to watch road racing or gravel racing. You know, like my parents will come to a race and they're like, we can't wait to watch you. I'm like, you're going to see me for about 10 seconds. Like, you know, maybe once or twice throughout the entire day, you know? So it's like, it's not that exciting to watch, but then it's like, you go to a crit and it's like, you're going to see me 100 times. And it gets exciting. And people like watching the crashes and like the tactics of crits is like, it's so much more precise. And I think it happens a lot faster. So it just makes it exciting. I think like the most exciting race I've been to this whole year is Tulsa Tough. Like the crowd there is absolutely insane. Like it's huge, you know? And that's like, we don't have that in any other like discipline in cycling. I don't think like in the US, there's just no one has a
maybe
crowd.
Cyclocross.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. I don't race cross.
Cause I think it's the kind of crowd, because there's the Athens Twilight. I used to live in Georgia. There was the Athens Twilight Criterium, and it also brought a huge crowd out.
Yeah.
And I think some of it is like, it creates the same kind of atmosphere that you do get in a small town in Europe, where you come out and you're part of the community and you're doing something together as a community. And it's more than just like, I'm watching people go by really fast, but I'm like hanging out with friends and neighbors and making a social event of it, where you can't really do that out on the unbound course. You're like if you're supporting somebody, you literally get in the car the second they leave to drive for an hour to set up, wait for them, and then get in the car again and drive probably for another hour. And then, so it's just a lot of like time spent in the car trying to get to them to help them for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, totally. And like, I think what Lifetime's doing as like they're trying to like create all the media around it is really cool, because it like allows you to follow the racing without actually like having to be like in the middle of Kansas on a dirt road somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, like it allows you to like follow the racing and see the excitement that's actually happening in the race that like the racers experience, but the audience doesn't necessarily get to.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see NCL
Yeah.
and Lifetime both taking very different approaches, but both like really taking large action like towards growing viewership and growing the audience and like telling athlete stories and stuff. So I think both organizations, like I feel very lucky to be a part of both, because I think they're definitely setting a new standard.
Yeah, I've said that like ultra running and even like Ironman triathlon should start taking a Lifetime approach to where you're, I mean, one, there's a massive opportunity for sponsorship, like to do stories on social media, like, you know, get such and such a company, they'll pay you to post the feed on their social media. The amount of viewership that Lifetime, like the amount of reach they got from their social media platform at Unbound was insane. But like, also we don't sit in front of a TV for 8 or 9 hours and watch a race unfold, right?
Yeah.
Like you're out running around, and like when you can catch up on it on Instagram stories or that little 45 minute replay video they did that they got out basically a day later from Big Sugar was so great, because it felt like you were right in the middle of the race, but you didn't watch all the boring parts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like 45 minutes. This is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about this race. And I didn't watch them just like ride their bikes together for like 20 miles and nothing happened.
Like, yeah, exactly. I know like my family doesn't cycle at all. Like my parents didn't know anything about racing when I got into it. So I had to like explain to them. I'm like, if I'm like not in the front, like that's a good thing. Like you don't want to see me at the front.
Yeah.
You know, like I had to explain to them, like, I'm going to be sitting in the middle of a group of people for hours. And I'll probably be like, I'll be setting up to do really well, but like, it's not going to be exciting and it's not going to look like I'm doing well. And you can't really like cheer for that. You know, you're like, oh wow, like she's rotating through. Like, that's so exciting. You know, like it's not like no one wants to watch you pace line for 6 hours. Yeah. So I think highlights are really cool.
It's even been an unpopular opinion amongst my group of friends, but I'm like, I've actually liked that the Tour de France times is an hour and a half coverage. I'm like, I watched the last bit. I like, because of where the time zone, I'm like, I watch it like as work before work starts. Like I've gotten to watch it and saw it live. And I know like I missed some cool things, like some breakaways and stuff, but like you kind of see the last bit of what's happening. That's when most of the action is going to happen.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway. I know some people are like super fans and they want to watch it start to finish, but I do think it's a piece of growing the sport, of giving people the sport in ways that they want to watch it and that they have time and attention to watch it.
Yeah, like it's definitely important to know the audience, you know, and like, yeah, you're right. Like no one's going to sit down and watch all of Big Sugar.
Yeah, like I was with my family watching, you know, like my dad and my brother watching football. They're not sitting and watching a football game. Like, my brother has it on while he's doing his workout in the gym, and then he's like cooking Thanksgiving dinner. And I'm like, it's just something playing in the background. You know, if it's like maybe his favorite team, he would sit down and watch it. Or if it was a really, really close game. But for the most part, they're just like kind of having it there. So anyway, I'm always very fascinated with how things are developing and fandom and obviously the business side of it. So, well, that's going to be a really different kind of race between your crit racing and things like Unbound and Leadville.
Yeah, so
how are you going to balance that?
That
what are you going to do to trade?
You know, that's a problem I'm giving to my coach. I'm just like, have fun with this one. We will see how it goes. I don't exactly know what that will look like. It's definitely like strategic. Race planning for sure, and like strategic A races, and like making sure that like we prioritize the ones that are most important, because a lot of them are very close together too, especially like that spring block. It's going to be a little tricky, I think, but you know, I'm here for the challenge. I think like this past year I kind of jumped into every discipline at the highest level for my first time all at once, and it worked out pretty well. So, you know, we're just going to keep rolling with it and see how it goes.
Oh, okay. We're putting this officially on the podcast. Christy fell asleep. She's actually sick. She's sick. Sorry. Sorry, Christy. I threw you under the bus. She's sick. But she slept through her alarm.
Oh.
We'll give her a break. She's sick.
Yeah. Yeah. It's after the holidays. She's been busy. No stress. Yeah.
Well, which is there an event you're looking for the most forward to in the series?
I think, like, I have two that I'm really looking forward to. I think Seattle and Leadville are both ones that I'm excited for. I raced Seattle last year, and I just had, like, a ton of fun. I think the course is really fun. I love mountain biking, and, like, I've been living on the central coast of California for the last, like, 6 years. So it just, you know, it feels like a home race to me.
Yeah.
So it's very exciting. It's also just a fun course. I enjoy it. I'm also excited for Leadville. Definitely, like, much more outside my comfort zone. Like, I have not done a race at that kind of altitude. I have not done a race that long. So that'll be two big first-time challenges. But I think just, like, it's such an iconic race. And it's a race that I've qualified for the last 2 years. Like, my first mountain bike race or second mountain bike race, I, like, qualified for Leadville. And I was like, I don't even know what Leadville is. Like, there's this race, you know, and, like, now it's like I get to do it as part of the Lifetime Grand Prix for my first time. So I just think it's a cool, like, kind of full circle moment and, like, a good challenge. So we'll see how it goes. Just keep it an open mind.
Yeah, it's almost every mountain biker that we ask that's new to the series is, like, says Leadville. And then almost every, like, cyclist, like, pure cyclist says unbent.
So. Unknown is not making my list of most excitement for
sure. Well, it's
I'm intimidated.
I would say the crit to race like that will be the hardest crossover, right? Because Seattle, like, it could be pretty fast,
mm-hmm.
you know. But Unbound is just like a long slog.
Yeah, I was talking to one of my mentors about this, and I think he pointed out, like, you know, I think Seattle is like, what, a 4 to 5 hour race, and a lot of them are in, like, the 4 to 7 range, I think. And he's like, you know what, after that, like, you're just doing it again. You know, it's like, it's, you just have to be mentally tough and, like, eat a lot at that point. You know, like, your training doesn't really change that much. Just, like, you just have to, you know, like, get it done that one day. So we'll see how I feel about that after the fact. But I think that's a good approach. Like, not trying to look at it as, like, I'm training for 200 miles, but looking at it as, like, you know, I'm training this endurance engine. And those are all the same systems, right, that you need for a 6 hour race is the same systems you need for a 12 hour race. You just have to race twice as long. So I think it's kind of just like this big mental challenge and, like, obviously fueling challenge for sure.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, and then you're going to be working still as a dietitian.
Yeah, I'm actually technically not a dietitian. I never did my year-long internship or took the exam, but I am licensed in nutrition from Precision Nutrition, and I have a bachelor's degree. So I am a assistant nutritionist or something like that. I don't think we have
my
right nailed down. But yeah, I still will be working in nutrition and helping out. So doing that remote as much as I can.
Cool. So, well, if somebody has had some past issues of underfueling, you would a good person to talk to. So
yeah, I hopefully, like, can really, like, my goal is to connect with other female athletes and just, like, help them build the confidence they need to fuel and train really smart and train hard and fuel that training, because I think that's super important. So hopefully I can have a positive impact.
I'm sure you will. You've got a great presence about you, so I'm sure you will.
Thank you.
Well, I've had a really fun time talking to you. I'm sorry, Christy. Sorry, Christy was sick. Where can people find you if they want to follow you or connect with you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram. My handle is Anna with 3 N's, so A-N-N-A, Hicks, H-I-C-K-S. I also have Facebook, but I've only posted, like, once in the last 5 years, so not that exciting.
Yeah.
And I'm also on Strava, and I post there every day, so just Anna Hicks on Strava.
Cool. Well, if we want to see what this coach plans for you to drink crits and long distance racing, follow Anna on Strava and get the scoop there.
Yeah, the I'm very crit curious. To Unbound journey. We'll have to make that a thing.
We'll see you coming in, like everybody sends a turn, do a wrong turn, like when they
Yeah.
come into the college, and you'll just start doing circles.
Yeah, I'll be like, oh wait.
You'll be like, oh, this is what we're supposed to do. We're just supposed to do
Yeah.
circles until we like lap somebody.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for joining me today. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I can't wait to see you at some of the races next year.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
You have been listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast. This podcast is edited and produced by the team at Live Feisty Media. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating. It really helps other women find the podcast. And be sure to follow us at Girls Gone Gravel on Instagram or Facebook.